Welcome back to Irish Illustrated Insider. I'm Tim O'Malley, joined by Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, John Bryce of Football Scoop. And guys, since we last convened, college football's transfer portal took over the sports internet. Takes over Notre Dame beginning today, a little later, but that's just the Homer Simpson four-day weekend equivalent of after it made its way to Bloomington, Indiana, apparently, and elsewhere in college. But we'll get to that news after some positive. Since we last met, Al Washington moved as expected to linebacker coach. That'll be good for his defensive coordinator resume in the future, but the big part of that, of course, Charlie Partridge added as defensive line coach. And Tim Priester, you followed up with that story with a story on that immediately.
Yeah, I think we can. I'm not getting much pushback on the notion that Charlie Partridge is one of the premier defensive line coaches in all of football. The development that he's done on the collegiate level, where he has spent the majority of his career, spent the last 2 years with the Colts. But Charlie Partridge, and I think it's a fun tie-in with the question that you included there, Tim, from Subfan. Which I'll go ahead and throw right now. With the loss of Max Bulla, the addition of Partridge in the switch of Washington, is this defensive staff defense better off than it was last year? My answer to the question is yes, because a premier defensive line coach supersedes a premier. There's a lot of quality linebacker coach, some better than others, obviously, but a premier defensive line coach by Charlie Partridge, that's where it all starts up front. I think Pat Koontz at Indiana, former Notre Dame player, is showing that he's a pretty damn good defensive line coach himself because of the way that unit plays. And so I know lost in the Nick Marsh news and everything that's been going on with the portal, that's kind of forgotten. But Charlie Partridge is a premier defensive line coach.
Yeah, I think I agree with you, TP. I think that the addition of Charlie Partridge, the movement of Al Washington, and the retention of Trey Reader, I think that trio of moves makes this an upgraded situation for Notre Dame. And I'm still waiting to hear back from a couple of different Indianapolis Colts assistants that I know just to get their general thoughts on Charlie. But I talked to another rival NFL assistant coach that faced the Colts this year and has known Charlie for several years because they've both been at the NFL and collegiate levels. And he said, first of all, John, great man, great man. He said, second of all, he absolutely recruits his ass off. And then he educated me as to how well Charlie Partridge has recruited in the state of Florida through the years. So I think, you know, Notre Dame recruits nationally, but anytime you hear another guy specifically know of one of his peers and where he recruits incredibly well, I think you have to be encouraged by that. So I do. I think it's a really good move by Marcus Freeman and company. I think retaining Trey Reader when Max Bulla called and offered him the job multiple times and offered him a nice salary and offered him a certain title and was making a lot of moves because of how much Max believed in Trey and Trey believed in Max. I think being able to retain Trey Reader is very key. I think it helps you with your relationship with a guy like Jalen Snead, who came into Notre Dame at the same time that Trey Reader did as players. So I think there are a number of benefits for that, number of pluses for Notre Dame in that scenario.
I think it's unexpected. It is huge. It's Trey Reader is not the name like, you know, if they with Laurinaitis and Bulla, but he's the guy behind the scenes, just like those guys were before they became the linebacker coach too. That's going to really help Washington. And the real key is like Al Washington's four defensive lines at Notre Dame have been very good. And it took till 2025 till you really saw, well, that's not Traore is another one, Traore and Bryce Young, but 2025 is by far his best defensive line recruiting. Other than that, there's been poor defensive tackles at Notre Dame because Howard Cross and Riley Mills were there. They helped kind of carry the torch for good defensive lines, but the defensive tackles recruited behind them pale in comparison to Traore, Young, Dunham, the guys at the defensive end. And it's just, it's odd, but it's true. And you need those defensive tackles and they are, well, hopefully they're not that hard to get in the portal. We'll find out. But defensive tackles do need to be recruited to Notre Dame as well. They can't just be the project
types. They're not signed yet. So, there's work to be done.
They just arrived. Tim, portal season just began. It's okay. You just get, you know, it's 9 a.m. Show up. It's good.
Timetable portal recruiting
is a thing.
Well, it's a thing when Indiana has the weekend that it had and Notre Dame didn't.
I want to get into that real fast because I know timetable recruiting necessarily in the portal isn't you were going to say it's not a thing because they might get three defensive tackles, but when Kurt Cignetti can say sign or else because they're grown men and they sign, timetable recruiting is it. Well, like, that was it. You know,
That's what happened with Nick Marsh.
Yeah,
here's your offer.
Sign or else. I think that's what happened with the others. Because look, Josh Burnham's a grown man. He doesn't need to ask his parents what's going on anymore. You know, it's Josh, this much money, now or never. Yeah, I'll go with you because you're playing next week and I don't want to go visit Wisconsin right now anymore. I mean, this is, I would say yes in that situation too if you're those guys.
Especially when it's the big number that Nick Marsh signed for. No, you're right. And that's a good point. Maybe I shouldn't be using that timetable term because time is of the essence and Indiana got to jump on Notre Dame and many others.
And that's what I was going to say is like Indiana got to jump on them while it is still preparing for its next football game. Yeah. So Indiana needed to act with great haste as it was and was able to do so. I think timing is critical. And I'm not just talking about Notre Dame. LSU felt like all weekend long, after Brendan Sorsby still took his visit, after the offensive coaches still went to pick him up at the airport and Charlie Weiss was flying back and forth from Oxford to Baton Rouge, they felt like, quote, we survived Texas Tech. I think we're going to get him. And then they still didn't get Brendan Sorsby. And so the timetable does matter, especially it matters more because this is the first in the fairly nascent transfer portal era. This is the first single window portal time. And it's only 2 weeks.
It really took forethought on their part to realize, like, you know, you're the first guy in. The first guy in is the closer for Portal. The last guy in is the closer in recruiting, but it's because it's a dragged out process in recruiting. That's the thing. You could be Kurt Cignetti, bring in the top defensive end prospect in the country that's 17 years old in July, and say, yes or no. And he says, yes. And then 6 months later, you're like, you went 9-3. I don't care, but yeah, it's not the way it works in the portal. So it is just a new world with portal recruiting. But we have a couple of good questions on this. Tim, you mentioned the price tag for Nick Marsh, and the price tags are tough to top when he doesn't get a chance to go get it matched either. Although I don't know if they're matching that necessarily.
No, Notre Dame was not going to match what was offered to Nick Marsh. And you know, Notre Dame's in on some other wide receivers. And you quickly find out that when you start doing film reviews on other wide receivers after Nick Marsh has agreed to go to Indiana, that they're going to pale in comparison to a lot of people. And I get it. Nick Marsh is a real, real special talent. There's no doubt about that.
Very quickly, Notre Dame and Armel Mukum parted ways as well. That's just a surprise, JB, because we thought he was back and then he wasn't back. That would lead you to believe that since it happened in the wake of the Donovan Heinisch retirement, that maybe Armel Mukum thought he could get a little more juice out of the squeeze, and that was nothing left to squeeze out of that.
Yeah, I mean, look, we've been addressing it for several weeks leading into this actual period of the portal being open, but we've talked about it longer than that. Negotiations are a real thing. Notre Dame has its scale that it wants to spend on players, be it from position to whether or not they are a starter or a special teams starter or a special teams field goal block, field goal punt, shield, start, all of these things. They're all broken down into different levels, and some guys, I think, have believed they could get a little bit more in recent weeks because of Donovan Heinisch has to medically retire or because some other people leave your program or Josh Burnham leaves your program or now KK Smith is leaving your program right after you didn't get Nick Marsh. I hardly think that's a coincidence. So it's a real thing, but Notre Dame has a budget. It will break its budget for certain players that it believes will be the difference in putting it in the CFP semifinals and title game next year.
Armel Mukum and KK Smith, not among those players that will break the budget. Tim, we'll get to this. I'll get to this one later. I want to get on Cree Thomas, a guy that we liked and you especially liked in the spring, but it was pretty clear by the fall he had been not recruited over, but not as good as Mark Zachary or Dallas Golden in the pecking order at this stage of their careers. And you consider who's coming in behind him, then he could have been recruited over at the position.
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, I think we all were. I don't know that you got a chance to see Cree Thomas maybe as much as some of us did.
I did not because I was not at that practice, but right. I knew Cree Thomas was on his way out as of
December. Yeah, you know, sharp kid, Brophy. I mean, you thought that there was a lot going there, but man, he made no dent in the fall. And as you mentioned, you know, and then you got those guys coming in too. No doubt about it. So the writing on the wall, Kenny Minchie, thrilled for him. Yep. Great opportunity. Big Ten, maybe not upper echelon Big Ten, but a chance to take Nebraska up in the direction of the upper echelon of the Big Ten. He's got some competition too, though, to beat out there. Who is that? JB, you remember who the Q? Isn't there another QB in that?
They do have a young freshman that they like fairly well there. I was just going to note that Kenny had no shortage of suitors in Kentucky. Cutter Bowley committed to Arizona State over the weekend. Kentucky had initially asked him back, and then Kentucky cast a wider net, and Kentucky pursued Kenny Minchie incredibly hard, and Kentucky was paying its quarterback, whoever it was, or whoever it ends up being, Kentucky's committed to paying that quarterback $2 million plus. So that gives you an idea of the marketplace for Kenny Minchie. Cutter Bowley ended up going into the transfer portal after initially getting a $2.1 to $2.3 million offer in December to return to Kentucky. And so I just like sharing these to give context of the marketplace. So we all have great respect for Kenny Minchie. It's an interesting situation he goes into because he goes from the program with the head coach who has top three job security of any program in the country to a program with the head coach who might enter 2026 with bottom three job security.
That's true. I hadn't thought of it that way. Very quickly, you guys know your Cutter Bowley trivia on why Cutter Bowley's famous at Irish Illustrated?
He was great in a camp at Notre Dame, if I'm not mistaken.
He was great as a freshman in a camp in Notre Dame that I attended, with CJ Carr being the guy that was committing that weekend. And I looked out there, I was standing next to Pete Sampson, and I was like, I can't tell if this guy's going to be the next Matt Jones or if he's just really awkward. But it was Cutter Bowley, and he could run, and he had a very, very, very sidearm delivery. If you're watching at home, it was like this back then. It's come up a little bit, and now he's going to make $2 million. So good job for Cutter Bowley, and I would like a cut because I think I got him that first offer, possibly, when you think about it.
Good luck. Good luck trying to get that cut. I am happy for the play. It's so long overdue for the players getting paid. $2 million for unproven quarterbacks, though. I mean, coordinators are making this on the highest level.
Well, it's interesting to me because, like, if Angeli got seven figures last year and Cutter Bowley's getting twice his seven figures, that market is changing a little bit because Steve Angeli, I mean, he ended up being better in that month than probably anyone thought he would be statistically, but you knew he was going to be fine, so you could pay him. You know, you knew Angeli'd be fine. You just didn't know if it would matter at Syracuse if he was fine, but...
Well, and we haven't seen the numbers, quote unquote, officially come out, and they won't officially come out, but we know Sorsby is in the $5 million range at Texas Tech, and I'm told that the Hoover kid at Indiana is going to be between $3 and $5 million as well. So the top portal quarterbacks are an entirely different strata. And I think Indiana paid Mendoza well over $2 million last year, if I'm not mistaken.
So that one worked out for Indiana.
Yeah, that one worked out. So quarterbacks are going to be making half of what Marcus Freeman makes.
They're getting there in certain situations. I mean, yeah, Sorsby is at $5 million. That's almost half of $11 million, 45% or something.
It's not bad. CJ Carr could get a pay raise. I'll get him another pay raise too, just like I got Cutter Bowley one. All right, I am going to say this name the way we've been saying it because we thought it was right by listening to someone else say it. But apparently we're wrong. But let's say if Mateen Ibaragba signs with Notre Dame, I will find out the official one because it looks way different on their phonetic spelling than that. But he, Xavier Gilliam, and Horace Lockett are three defensive tackle prospects to be on campus, and we'll start going down the list. But let's start with the most important position, not to give away a question later.
Yeah, well, we've talked about Ibaragba before. I mean, this is a guy that's extremely quick off the snap of the football, and you can two-gap. You can do whatever you want with him, you know, in the middle of your defensive line. He's quick. He's really good. He runs himself. I've said this on a previous podcast. He runs himself out of place, too, because he is so aggressive in getting through the gap. But he's a really good football player. I like Xavier Gilliam. I think there's a lot of upside with Xavier Gilliam. He's got 3 years of eligibility, which would be a real rarity. I think Notre Dame's chances are pretty good there. He'll be coming in one of the days this week, I believe.
He is. It looks like it is Ibaragba on the 5th, Gilliam on the 6th, and Lockett is also on the 5th.
So, yeah, I think Gilliam's got a lot of upside. When I first saw him, you know, in high school, he was a 260-pound edge guy, and he grew out of that. I fundamentally like his setup. His pre-snap stance is excellent. You know, he plays with that good, strong bowed back and really brings his backside. I think there's a lot of upside with him. Not huge. He's listed at 302, so he's gotten a lot bigger. Still don't know that he's necessarily a real big body, but a great motor. Love the way he plays. If you got those two guys at defensive tackle, which I think is realistic, I'm not sure where they are with Horace Lockett, who's a 355 pounder. And I truthfully need to look more at him. I think that would be a really, really good pair. I don't know if three is realistic, but I'm sure that they will would continue to look under the circumstances. And tracing back to what, when we were talking a little bit ago about defensive tackles and the guys that are left over, this is where guys like Chris Burgess and Cole Mullins both have to get bigger, stronger, but those are guys that maybe you can count on them to a large degree in the 2026 season.
And just for people listening, Lockett is UCF, and I don't think I said this, and Xavier Gilliam is Penn State. Yep. JB, go ahead.
Yeah, so on Gilliam real quick, just being told this morning to monitor Tennessee, that's probably the biggest competition with the Irish to get Gilliam. And obviously Tennessee just hired Jim Knowles, so he'll have familiarity with the new defensive coordinator at Tennessee, because it's the guy he played more than 400 snaps for this past season. And then Tennessee was able, I believe, to retain Rodney Garner, who's widely considered one of the better D-line coaches in college football, and especially in the SEC, because he's had decorated stints at Georgia, Auburn, and Tennessee, where he's had multiple first-round picks at all three of those programs. So that's one to watch there. I'm trying to get a little more information to see how good Tennessee feels about him, or just to see, you know, where Notre Dame stands, if it's equal pecking order and it truly comes down to where the guy feels the best this week, or if there are other circumstances at play.
Very quickly, guys, because it happened about an hour and a half before we started doing this outline, John Henry Daly from Utah in the portal. Notre Dame is being mentioned. Tore his Achilles in November. He says 6 months. Of course, it's been 1.5 months, so that could be 7.5 months. If it was a full tear, I don't know enough about this to say he can't come back, but I can't imagine he's back in 7 months from a ruptured or torn Achilles. But John Henry Daly, for the sake of reference, in 11 games. These numbers don't mean anything until I give you the reference. 47 pressures and 29 stops. Stops is defined as a failure by the offense. For the sake of reference, the last time Notre Dame had someone with 47 pressures was Julian Aquara and Jerry Tillery, both in 2018. That's a while. And he did it in 10.5 games. And Utah plays a fine schedule. So that would be a huge advantage. But Tim Priester, JB, would it be something you're bringing in at a price tag where you are the stretch run October 27th and onward guy?
Yeah, JB, go ahead. I have not had an opportunity to see him yet, Tim. Eager to do so. But man, Achilles. Go ahead, JB.
Yeah, no, it would. If you're doing that, then you feel like you're getting at a good deal and that he's going to boost you the last 2 months of the season, because at that position, you know, you've got to be able to have your get off and your twitch to stand up to what you need to do to duplicate or replicate the type of numbers that you pointed out that he's already had. If you're Notre Dame and you feel like he's a great fit for your room and he's willing to buy into the role and he sees Notre Dame as a value add and not just a paycheck, then yeah, I think you do it based on how your portal priorities are. And if you feel like you have the budget and you have the roster space to bring him in. I mean, look, if you're Notre Dame next year, you fully expect to play a 16-game season. I mean, I know we're sitting here the first Monday of January talking about how many games Notre Dame should play in its 2026 season. But I think, you know, that's the expectation. You just played 16 a year ahead of schedule in 24, so why not be prepared to play 16 in 26? And we saw that they had some guys who effectively proved to be late-season call-ups and free agents that were critical in that playoff run.
Tim Priester, Ian Strong, you made vague reference to him, but now you get to talk about him. Visiting later this week, wide receiver prospect, and you've written a lot about Brody Foley. He is, I think, today, tomorrow, and the next day. Nice long visit to South Bend.
Really like Brody Foley. And I think, the term musket is thrown around too loosely, but that's a guy that's your number one tight end. You plug and play him. You're surrounded by a bunch of good young players, plus Ty Washington. I think that works. I don't understand the notion that Notre Dame doesn't need a tight end. You always need tight end. Tight ends play significant roles on special teams. They play significant roles on Notre Dame offenses. Even if you want to throw the ball around a lot, you know, you look at, yeah, like I'm thinking of the Bears game last night, and you see Kmet and Loveland on the field together a whole bunch. You need tight ends. Brody Foley is a number one tight end. He is here. I expected that he is here already at Notre Dame. Really, really like his game. I think he's a, and again, when I say this, I'm not saying he's a better player, but he's a big, strong guy like Michael Mayer, but he's got a little bit more agility to him, a little bit more athleticism. Not saying he's better, but I think he would be sensational. And then he, I mean, Ian Strong, everything coming off of Nick Marsh is bad news. I get that. And he's not speedy, but he's caught 95 balls in 2 years, and he's got great hands, and he gets open, and he wins 50-50 balls, and he would play boundary, and you would hook him up with Micah Gilbert, who should take a significant step forward next year. I mean, how is your – now, again, I think you would play – you'd play Nick Marsh at boundary, too. You could probably move him around quite a bit. But how are you not better with Ian Strong and Micah Gilbert, numbers-wise? I think those two will end up produce what if they get strong. I'm not saying that they will. You know, I think he's a pretty good football player, but everything, when you compare him to Marsh, of course not. You know, he's not that good, but I think he's a, like, we can say, oh, he did this against this team and that team. Well, he did it against Iowa. He did it against Washington. He did it against Illinois. I mean, those are some of the, you know, mid to upper mid range football teams. And then you can say, well, okay, he didn't do it against some of the better teams. Well, Malachi Fields scored 5 touchdowns, and the best team among those 5 was Pittsburgh, you know, along with BC and, you know, some other Purdue.
Speaking of BC, have you heard anything, JB, about Reed Harris from BC?
I have not. No,
I have not either. But he keeps finding his way into my DMs. not Reed Harris. That would be different. No, but I keep getting messages about Reed Harris and to look into Reed Harris. So someone to look into, because I know people are high on him from Boston College. And of course, if you're a receiver that produces at Boston College, pretty good. It's hard to do.
I wanted to share real quickly on Brody Foley, because I did reach out to his former high school coach again to get a scouting report on him. And I knew this already, but it's been reiterated to me in recent days. Remember, he was committed to Tennessee, and really Tennessee screwed him when they had a regime change and an offensive coordinator change. And then he ended up having a little bit of a circuitous career. But he's taken that of getting jobbed by Tennessee and kind of encouraged to seek a scholarship elsewhere instead of honoring it, because they took somebody over him. But here's what his coach sent to me. All-state tight end for us. Super physical at the line of scrimmage. Ability in the pass game is where you can line him up really anywhere and get the defense to have some schematic fits trying to match up. His body has changed for the better over the last 3 years. He grew very quickly in high school while also playing basketball. After stopping playing basketball and focusing only on football, his body has added weight, his speed increased, and his side-to-side movement was quickly changing for the better.
And he can, and he's a legitimate wildcat right now. You know, I went back, like I saw a bunch of replays, and then I saw he only had 5 carries, but he's good at it. And we saw what Notre Dame could do with Mitchell Evans. That wasn't wildcat. That was
Mitchell Palooza.
Under, yeah.
He only had 8 center. Carries, and everybody remembers that 7
of the first 7 worked. Exactly right. And so Foley had 5 carries. 2 of them went for touchdowns. I'm sure the other 3 were short yardage runs. Really, really well-rounded tight end. Really well-rounded prospect.
Also on campus tomorrow, we have word, Jalen Thompson, Michigan State edge, and then Tim Xavier Townsend today or tomorrow. Must be tomorrow, because I think he's finishing up with Florida State. I was looking at the Xavier Townsend thing. He doesn't have an extensive return experience on his resume, so I'm not sure
But he reminds you of Jaden Harrison, and he is very fast. Again, still.
I like Jaden Harrison's touchdowns on tape that I don't see.
Yeah, exactly. still delving into his tape. Jalen Thompson, man, he looks the part. He really looks the part, but I don't know how productive he is. Now, he had, you know, 30 tackles for a defensive end. Most defensive ends don't get 30 tackles in a season, and he had that. Now, tackle totals can be skewed and what have you. I just haven't seen enough really good stuff from him that says, wow, that's a defensive end they need to get.
Quick reference. Sorry, JB, to cut off here. I wanted to get Townsend because I know he had 20 pressures and 18 stops for Notre Dame. That would be the equivalent of being Jared Dawson, but that was a tackle, 21 pressures. Bryce Young, by the way, had 28 pressures for people.
You're saying Thompson, not Townsend, right?
Yes, Thompson. Okay. And that's around the range of, that is basically Bryce Young's year. It's the best way to say it. I mean, I can't compare him to KVA because he's a different position and a different player. So that's basically Bryce Young's year. Young and more pressures
strong,
and fewer.
Big, stuff. Strong, looks good in a uniform kind of guy. Productivity. I just would like to see a little bit more of it. We haven't mentioned Braden Atkinson.
No, we haven't. Yep.
The quarterback from Mercer. And there had been some talk about Jaden Craig, the quarterback from Harvard. I haven't heard anything on him lately, JB. Maybe you. Oh, that's right. He did go to TCU. Well, that's why I like Jaden Craig a whole hell of a lot more than.
Because he's gone?
I like him. No, because he's good. And he went to TCU. I don't believe in Braden Atkinson for Notre Dame. He put up massive numbers at Mercer.
The Harvard of the South, Tim Mercer. So you could just go there.
I see too much Drew Pine in Braden Atkinson.
Yeah, well, you know, you're not looking for him to be your full-time starter. So I get that comp completely, TP, but he is a guy who played a tremendous volume of football. Mike Jacobs, anybody who is desperate enough to also listen to the Football Scoop podcast, then knows that I'm pretty bullish on Mike Jacobs. I think he's a fine coach and he did a great job with him and then left. It took over at Toledo. I'd made reference on our Irish Illustrated podcast several weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks ago. I think that the Notre Dame had some interest in FCS experienced signal callers. This is who I had in mind. I'd been tipped off. I think North Carolina, even though it wasn't maybe one of the programs listed over the weekend, I'm told to see if North Carolina also tries to get involved with the Mercer quarterback. But he's certainly got some dynamics to him, and he's a guy that you wonder if he's willing to come into Notre Dame and potentially be that experienced backup this year, get some spot playing time because you think you'll win some games by blowouts, and then be a guy who could potentially challenge a Teddy Girard or somebody for the starting job in 27.
He put up numbers. He put up massive numbers, and he didn't start at the beginning of the year. I think there was an injury. They put him in a lineup and he put up massive numbers. I don't like the arm strength. I don't like the size.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say he's a guy that over the course of the fall, I had a number of different SEC assistants and FCS head coaches tell me they believed he would be on an SEC roster in 26. So he does have some quirks to his game, but he's been on my radar since early fall because of the numbers he was putting up. And because, again, I'll defer to the large crowd of people smarter than me. And all those coaches were like, this guy, watch, he'll be in the SEC next year.
We don't want to leave anything out, but before we go to segment two, Jordan Faison will not play lacrosse this year to focus on football. Good thing, but also sad. It was fun, Jordan Faison being a lacrosse athlete as well. But at some point, Jordan Faison got good enough where he can make that choice. And you say that's smart as opposed to, what are you doing, dude? This is a smart choice by Jordan Faison.
That's a good point. We're going to wrap up this segment without talking about the basketball game.
No, we're going to throw that. I was finishing it up right here. Is it time for Shrews to take a cruise other than maybe the Clemson game off? What do you guys think? That was a reaction.
JB, you were reporting that game.
Yeah, I get why he was upset. I do, especially the way the officials flip-flopped on their call. I still thought it was dreadful execution by Notre Dame. And so we've probably spent a little more time talking about Shrews' inexcusable outburst and not enough time talking about what was inexcusable closeout to the game. You're up 4 with 16 seconds left on the road. You lose in regulation. You should have had picket fence defense almost at midcourt to get that foul given. I like this. I'm a believer you foul when you're up 3. I'm a believer you foul and you don't give the other team, especially a team at home, a chance to hit a 3 that can force overtime and give that home team life going into a bonus session. But you got to make sure you foul. You have to make sure you execute. And Day-Day Ames, I think, had abused his defender right before that to cut it from a 4-point lead down to 1, and then he abused his defender again, and the foul was committed. It was still committed on the floor, but it was too close to the area that he was going up with the shot. And again, I just thought the execution was poor. I like the foul call. I like the call to foul, but you foul him as soon as he gets to midcourt. You do not let him get within 2 feet of the arc to where, as you're reaching, he can put up a shot that the officials can deem a credible shot attempt. So I thought Shrews' outburst was really poor. I thought it was matched by the poor execution.
I tell you what, I Man, I can understand the emotions that Shrewsbury was feeling.
I think
at
you
could
go yell at someone without looking like you're going to assault them.
I understand. I understand. But somebody, as somebody that has that type of outburst within his framework, me, like him, I understand the emotions that he would be feeling at that time. And we can say that they changed the rule. The rule stinks. Man, I can understand the emotions he was feeling, but you can't do that. You're the head coach in Notre Dame and you can't do that. And it crossed a line and it has left an indelible mark on his coaching tenure at Notre Dame.
And that's not the first time that Notre Dame has seemingly snatched defeat from the jaws of victory multiple times now under Shrews with multiple late game failed situations that involve the 3-point line. And I would note, I think he's now lost 42 or 43 games as Notre Dame's head coach in his 2.5 seasons. I did some research. 14 of those are by 5 or fewer points. And I just feel like in year 3, you've got to be winning more of those 5-point games than you're losing. And Notre Dame still is not doing that.
Notre Dame hosts Clemson Saturday. I will be there. We think Shrewsbury will be there. Well, is a 1-game suspension possible here, internal guys?
I mean, we might have heard about it. I think we would have heard about that by now.
With the ACC having issued a reprimand, maybe the 1-game suspension doesn't happen. But I know that Notre Dame folks were quite chagrined by his behavior, and especially the camera angle from the baseline that shows it from the viewpoint of like the student section or whatever that was.
Yeah.
We'll be back with segment 2 and less Shrewsbury talk on burning up the boards. With college football season winding down and the NFL playoffs about to begin, I've been looking to find the best deal on tickets, both for family and friends, but also as a memorable gift idea. That's why I want to offer the sponsor of today's Burning Up the Boards, SeatGeek, a huge shout-out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. There are more than 70,000 events listed on SeatGeek, guys, including concerts, sports, festivals, and more. So whether you're an Irish fan looking for a ticket to that AC/DC concert in September, or any of the NFL playoff matchups I mentioned coming down the road, SeatGeek has your back. Each ticket is rated on a scale of 1 to 10, so you know you're getting a good deal. Look for the green dots. Green means good, red means bad. But every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use Irish10, that's all capital letters of the number 10, for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. 10% off any tickets with the promo code Irish10. But make sure you click the link in the description to download the app and have that code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you, SeatGeek. Question number 1 for burning up the boards comes from not only ArrowFan624, but if you want your name on here, Oregon Irish 52, Sully Patrick, Michigan is a joke, and Jacobs 3, the Jobbin' Joker, JF546867, W Carry 14, Topper Lax, Big ND Fan, Irish Fan 85, Funny Education, and Tim Priester, Irish Shem, one of the favorites. All the same question. Why did ND host a grand total of 0 visitors this weekend? Meanwhile, Cignetti and Indiana are getting it done while preparing for a national championship game.
Why?
Why?
Because that was the schedule they set up, apparently.
Why do you think that was that a good idea? Setting up a schedule for 4 days after the portal opens is when it begins.
Right. And they've got a bunch of visitors coming in this week, which was necessary, but I don't think that you can – I mean, is there like really a varying opinion on this? The portal opens, you have to react. I don't understand it, just like a lot of other people don't.
Yeah, I know coaches who wanted to take one final day Friday to see exactly who went into the portal on that opening rush and to see how many, I guess, prearranged deals were already made so that they weren't wasting their time or their school's resources to bring guys onto campuses that had no intention of visiting places with open minds. But I don't really know many people that didn't want to start having guys on campus by Saturday morning. And there's urgency. And I referenced it in the first frame. I'll reference it in this segment as well. There's a greater urgency than ever before than any of us know or have seen, because this is the first ever 14-15 day only transfer portal window. And remember, it was just 3 years ago, guys. There were 45 days in the portal window. And I think even before that, there might have been 60, because there were 45 and 15. And so you have gone from 45 and 15 to last year, what was 30, because it was 20 and 10. And now you're all the way down to one window and 15. It's just not the NFL. There's not this meticulous slow burn to free agency and all this other stuff. It's instantaneous, and you have to act with urgency, or you have to be prepared for your contingency plans.
Your season was over on November. You knew your season was over on November 30th.
Well, you didn't know you're not in the playoffs.
December 7th.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry.
December 7th or
8th. December 7th. I'm sorry. Yep. But that's, I mean, that's, you know, a full, that's more, that's 3.5 weeks.
Yeah.
4 weeks. Yeah.
4 weeks ago yesterday was the robbery. So.
To quote to Marlo from The Wire to Michael when he showed up and Michael was sleeping, early bird, get that worm, dog. Next question, Basic Bro 25. I know O'Malley and Bryce favor taking quarterback for some reason. I am reading his question, by the way, okay. And Priester thinks tight end Brody Foley is necessary, but is that where the money should go? Could you all simply instead offer your portal needs for Notre Dame? In other words, if they don't get maybe 1, 2, and 3, it's a bad portal season. That's a good question, because I can't find a position where you can't argue that you can take a portal player, maybe other than offensive line, which is just a hard fit for Notre Dame.
Go ahead, John.
I mean,
you don't have to defend our quarterback situation, JB. I think I just like the way he wrote the questions.
No, I give him props. It made me laugh when I saw it before we got on air. It made me laugh again between segment one and segment two. And it made me laugh just now while you were asking it. I'm not defending it. I just think it's fact. You need a guy who's taken meaningful college snaps before in case the unthinkable happens to CJ Carr, who, by the way, went in into last year with no meaningful snaps, and look at how it set you behind the eight ball early in the season with your two losses, and then you won 10 in a row. You want to have somebody, even if it's for a helmet popping off and you got to finish a series without CJ Carr, you need a guy that can go in and have some college experience. I just think we've said it all along. I'll continue to reiterate it. The skills positions on offense and the interior of the defensive line are the most important in my book, and I think those are legitimate portal needs. And when I talk about skill on offense, I do consider a quarterback with some college breathing to his credit.
Yeah, I mean, I think six podcasts, we've probably talked about what their needs are. And we know it's defensive tackle, wide receiver, no doubt. No, I mean, multiple wide receivers. I think tight end, especially a guy as good as Brody Foley, is important. They got their punter. They need a quarterback. They need a kicker. They were hoping to get a nickel who went to USC, defensive end. I mean, you can't say, okay, we're going to go in order. We're going to get the highest needs now. It's too fluid. You can't do it that way. And it starts by having visitors the first weekend that the portal's open.
The odd thing to me is you mentioned Jontez Williams going to USC. He didn't really play nickel, so I don't know why. He was a corner.
They were gonna
convert him, though.
No,
so that was the plan.
I say nickel because you watch him play and he's got the skill.
Yeah, it was an interesting decision, but it doesn't matter anymore. Yeah, to answer it like 1, 2, 3, this is not Timmy Wright. It's not, first of all, you need about 8 guys, but 1, 2, 3 would be defensive tackle, wide receiver for me. Starting defensive tackle-ish, you know, as good as Jason Onye, minimum. And starting wide receiver.
Yeah.
And if you want to say defensive tackle, defensive end, if that defensive end just went in the portal recently and will be a late October call up, John Henry Daly, John Henry Daly would be a pretty big guy to bring in for Notre Dame next year as that season progresses for me.
I would contend, I think a place kicker is top three.
That's true. Place kicker is top three because you can't lose all your place kickers. That's no good.
Money Mitch sealed your crucial win to open the 24 season, and he sealed your win in the Orange Bowl to catapult you to a chance to play for a national championship game. And we've seen atrocious place kicking in these playoffs, but you don't want to have this team that you've assembled that has so few spots of true need and get into next season and be like, well, we could do it all if we just had a kicker we believed in. And so I think a reliable, proven place kicker is absolutely a top three need for this team.
And we believe they are going to get one of those kickers.
They're endeavoring to do so, that's for sure.
Because you don't get your number one kicker that doesn't go in the portal doesn't mean you're not getting a good kicker. And they're not all Money Mitch either, right? They're not all going to be Mitch Cheater. You just got to But going to get the next Spencer Schrader and the next Blake Groupie and all those guys that kick in the NFL is also a good thing to do when you're looking for
kickers. Money Mitch struggled. I realize that part of it was injury related, but he struggled. He struggled too for a while there during his one season.
Very quickly, C.F. Frazier added to that. I'm having difficulty getting too upset over the portal because we have not missed on defensive line prospects. Can you please ruin my general sense of calm? He is looking for palliative care that we cannot offer at this point.
No, they're still sitting in a pretty good situation there. We mentioned three. I don't know the odds of landing all three. It sure would help. And again, I want to, you know, man, I'm a believer in Cole Mullins. And I liked what little I saw Chris Burgess providing.
We do have a question on those guys coming up.
Yeah. Okay. I will stop talking with that.
And last thing on the kicker, I'm monitoring Dominic DeFritis, the App State kicker who's gone into the portal.
Local guy.
Yeah. He's a local guy who had a splendid 2025 season at App State. So that one's going to be interesting. That's not the only one, and you know, Notre Dame's done its homework on him. I don't know where he ranks on their board. He's on their board, but that's one worth paying attention to. And yeah, we're sitting here to the question about can you ruin my mood here because I'm not that worried yet. Yeah, Notre Dame's on the college football yacht for 2026, but these are the parts that give you, you know, really fine champagne and some caviar and make you feel like your yacht is fully stocked.
So, Tim Priester, App State kicker. What do you think of when you hear of an App State kicker? Mr. Julian Rauch with the winner. I think of App State and Michigan every time.
In Michigan Stadium. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Took a lot of heat off old Georgia Tech, Notre Dame that day, didn't it?
Yeah.
Question number three. Down the line, 1922. For a couple of years now, we've heard that Notre Dame is considered, that 2026 is considered the year for Notre Dame to make a legitimate title run. Why does 2026 still seem to be regarded as a more championship or bust season than 25 ever was? I fail to see how the 26 roster projects to be definitively better than the 25 preseason roster, or is it more so because the championship window seemingly closes after 2026?
Well, I think that's a good question. You know, I think we had some concerns going into 2025, and then the defense started playing dynamite. The interior defensive line started producing. Notre Dame shut down the run. I mean, these were things that were in that we had serious questions about going into the season. And then the deeper into the season we went, the more that we believed in the 2025 team. And then, you know, you see the development of Carr and Jeremiah Love and the offensive lines coming together, and Love and Price are running up and down the field. I think it evolved into that. We didn't quite see it that way in the preseason, mainly because we were concerned about the interior defensive line.
You know, I think for me, it's been why 2026 instead of after 2026 or compared to 2025. It's CJ Carr being so much better, but it's not that it's the end of a championship window after 2026. It's that very realistically, CJ Carr, Adon Shuler, Tay Johnson, Leonard Moore, Christian Gray, Drake Bowen, Kingston Viliamuasa, Jordan Faison, Charles Jagusa, Jaden Osbury could all leave as graduates or fifth-year guys, and then guys like Leonard Moore. If KVA is healthy, he can go. Hopefully KVA can go because he's so good in the 9 games he plays or 11 games he plays. That's a lot of names. That's a lot of good players. If Tay Johnson comes back, you still lose Shuler, Leonard Moore, and Christian Gray. I just think that 2026 is a window of a collection of really good players that's hard to top. That's a good group.
Yeah. And for me, here's one big thing that I've hammered on forever. For the first time in the Marcus Freeman era, he returns the same starting quarterback into this 26th season as he had through all of 25. That's a huge reason for me. The sport has never been more quarterback driven. And we expected CJ Carr to be really good. I contend he absolutely exceeded my expectations in 25 with how good he was, because now I think it's very feasible to project him as a likely first round draft pick in 2027, as long as he puts together another fine backup season to his debut season. So I think because of that, you have the quarterback that you recruited, you tailored, you groomed, and you've given him basically the keys to your franchise. and your schedule is more conducive to a playoff run that doesn't have you beat all to pieces by the time the playoff rolls around, although you still foolishly open with a road game. And I hate that for Marcus Freeman and the players. And I think it's poor to do that year after year after year after year. But I think all of those things. And then look, when you talk to the staff, and we see the same things, Leonard Moore is projected to be a first-round draft pick in 27, could be the first cornerback taken in 27. Adon Shuler, by returning, has a chance to be probably a top-three safety on the 2026 NFL draft boards. If Charles Jagasaw stays healthy, we've heard for years how much the NFL teams love his frame and size. KVA, if he comes back healthy. I know Chris Ash has told people that he believes KVA has first-round draft potential to him. Bryce Young, we're all waiting to see him unlock it, but if he ever unlocks it, we know he has that ability, and he would immediately become a prospect of which NFL franchises would be enamored. So for me, all of those reasons, and you went into 26, no matter how much you liked CJ Carr and you believed Jeremiah Love was the best player in college football, you still went into 25 with a guy that had never played meaningful college football, period.
Yeah, as it relates to the question, I think, you know, all of this that we've said here, all the guys that T.O. mentioned that will be gone, you know, I'm 2027, every program, I mean, the elite of the elite can skip some of those years where, you know, the quote rebuilding years. 2027 is going to be a little bit of a rebuild, or whatever term you want to use for it. There's a trend. It's going to be a transition year. That doesn't mean they can't be championship caliber again in 2028. But I think with all the guy, everything we said here and all the names that Tim mentioned, I mean, it's pretty hard to look at 2027 and say, okay, well, that's the year they're going to win the national title. That's why we're pointing to 2026. We have a question from Tater Dad One. Is Keon Keeley, the defensive end from Alabama, is he a possibility for Notre Dame? If so, would he offset the loss of Burnham, or would you consider him a downgrade? I haven't studied any Keon Keeley film in a while.
Yeah, his Oklahoma game and his Auburn game and his nobody played well against IU. he had a pressure against IU. Who cares? But the other games, his name kept popping up in Oklahoma. That was really the playoff game I watched the most until this past weekend, the first round of junk that never should have happened. I think it's a possibility, especially with Trey Reader staying on board. There's a Trey Reader connection to Keon.
Oh, there's a strong Trey Reader connection. Right, John?
I wouldn't. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely. Super strong there. We'll see. You know, he's 2 years into Alabama. That's typically a little bit different on the transfer scale for what Notre Dame tries to do, from either getting guys after 1 year or getting guys positioned to graduate. So I don't know where Keon Keeley stands from an academic credit standpoint. I don't think it would be a downgrade at all. I think if Notre Dame found a way to get Keon Keeley, and especially by bringing Charlie Partridge into the mix, you would think that would be a big picture upgrade, especially because in theory, you might be able to get Keon Keeley for 2 years.
Man, who wouldn't be excited about Keon Keeley coming in? I mean, all the disappointed fans from a couple of years ago.
Isn't he a junior though, guy? Wait, he's a 2023 class.
Did he?
He was a freshman in 23, a sophomore in 24, and a junior in 25. I know he redshirted, but
yeah, he redshirted.
He's going to be a senior. Yeah.
With 2 years of eligibility.
With 2 years. That's good, though. That means he had more time to got to get past that first year academic.
Boy, you'd love for Charlie Partridge to work with a guy like that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
So, that'd be nice. So then, yeah, is Keon Keeley going into the portal with a chance to be within a few credit hours of graduation? Right. We don't know.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty important, because then he might have to stay and get those credit hours before showing up, which is fine. That's what Malachi Fields and Bo Collins did, and it worked out just fine for both of them, because Bo Collins made the biggest touchdown of the year against Georgia, and Malachi Fields was very good. Our next question, going to start with Tim Priester. Bobby 1556, I get there is a need for defensive tackles in the portal, but I have a question about a guy already on the roster. Do you think a guy like Elijah Hughes showed enough where he could become more of an impact player, or do you see him as another nice rotational piece? Also, I know Priester has talked positively about Cole Mullins. He flashed against Arkansas, but then we never saw him again. Where does he fit going forward?
Well, Mullins needs to get bigger. I mean, that's his plight up to this point. I Elijah Hughes, I think, probably did more in your eyes, Tim, than you anticipated.
Yes.
Because he kept getting better and better, and I agree with that. I just wonder about his ceiling. I think that The ceiling might be a little limited size overall, just bulk. I don't know how, you know, how much he can add there, but they need some hits. And that's why I say, you know, like in terms of Burgess, he's a guy that in terms of size by next year, he could be pushing in that 290, dude, 295, man. Right?
He's a big guy right now. Yeah, I saw him next to me at Stanford on the field, and it's a big guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy. So those guys are really key. Jason Onyeka returning is really, really key at this point because of the way that he played down the stretch in particular. They can get some contributions from what's already on the roster, but you know, we're talking about the portal. Defensive tackle is the most important position in Notre Dame.
Yeah, I think there's still more out there for Elijah Hughes. I think he could probably have the chance again under Charlie Partridge. Could he develop into being more like a Donovan Heinisch type contributor for you? I think he could. I think he absolutely could. He definitely flashed at times this year and showed that he could be very effective in short range bursts. So, you know, he already has better size than a Donovan Heinisch. He's listed at 6'3", 300, whereas Donovan Heinisch was listed at 6'2", 277. So I think there's more out there.
Heinisch always said he was closer to 300. But I think, I like Elijah Hughes, and I think he's at his first move is what makes him as productive as he was. The first move is disruptive to offensive lines. And can he add to that? Sure, he can add to that. Absolutely.
So defensive tackle portal, Hughes, Mullins, Burgess, man, they could use Jason Onye.
Absolutely. Plenty
to work with. That's as much as they had to work with last year.
Yeah. And now you're with a couple portal guys. Now you're looking at this and saying, okay, it may be a situation where, again, we're sitting here in January, like we were last year, saying, what are they going to do? A defensive tackle. It could be a position that evolves with 4, 5, 6 guys that you like once you get into the season and the season progresses.
And, you know, do you continue to cross-train Bryce Young and use him a little bit more along the interior? I think that discussion is happening. So, and I think that's very...
I think that makes sense. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think it's a potentially very captivating element to study in spring ball. All right. Question number 6 from T-Row in 1989. And I like this one. It's pretty obvious that programs like Indiana aren't spending as much on high school recruiting and going big in the portal. Indy is a portal player, but they also invested more heavily in high school to land a top 5 class. Which strategy do you think will pay off more consistently?
Go ahead, Tim. I did put a mark next to this question as well, Jay, because I think it's a good question. One that I'm looking forward to answering.
Yeah. Really good question. I do default to having the basis of your team being money from recruiting more than portal. Georgia, Ohio State, and Notre Dame do that. Indiana, Texas Tech, Oregon, Miami. Trying to think of the teams in the Ole Miss is a mixture, right, JB? Pretty good mixture.
Decent mixture. More portal. I would say
more portal. Yeah, Texas recruits. I still think the better idea is really good top tier recruiting. But if you're outside that top tier recruiting, then the portal is definitely the way to go because you're paying guys you don't know anything about in high school. You don't know anything about. All right, think of it this way. How much money did Notre Dame have to get rid of dead money from last year in the last 2 years with their redshirt freshmen and freshman classes? Like you're telling those guys to take pay cuts. You don't need to tell Malachi Fields to take a pay cut. I think you really got to be careful what you're offering high school kids now outside the best ones and then maybe build from there.
You know, I think the high school recruiting as the main emphasis is what works best for Notre Dame. The whole student athlete model, which we know absolutely truly does exist at Notre Dame and will continue to as Notre Dame tries to fight through the muddied waters of college football that are getting muddied more every year. I think it promotes chemistry and culture. And that's just the way the Notre Dame has to go about doing it. Look, Indiana can go ahead and spend money on Nick Marsh. You're going to have to do that year after year after year. It's a tough way to continue to build a team every year. It's a tough way for a fan to watch a a program?
I don't know about that. It's a tough way for me to watch. This is a question we have at the very end of this thing. I'll save my conversation for that. I think it's a tough way to watch college football. I'm not sure. I certainly did not mind.
Fans just want good players.
Malachi Fields not choosing.
No, fair enough. No, I know. But I don't want Notre Dame. You know, they bring in 8 transfer portal guys every year, bring in 3 times that. Man, it loses some of the essence of Notre Dame. But people want good football players. They want Notre Dame to win. And that's ultimately what matters. But my point is, for Notre Dame, the model that Marcus Freeman has created is the right one, in my opinion.
I agree.
Well, and I think that when T.O. did a good job of outlining the teams in the playoffs this year, you know, Georgia has a very similar model to that of Notre Dame.
And Ohio State, too, and they just won the national title.
Exactly, Ohio State as well. And look, Miami has a lot of homegrown recruits on its roster, as does Oregon. Texas Tech, no. Ole Miss, not many at all. Indiana,
Texas,
we know.
Texas has plenty because they're always going to be able to recruit. Yeah.
Texas does, but Texas wasn't a playoff team this year. You know, Indiana, we know, not the case at all. Alabama, a blend. It had a lot of homegrown left from the Nick Saban era. We'll see what that looks like moving forward. Oklahoma, a blend. But I think that for sustained success, you look at Georgia and you look at where Notre Dame is positioned, and I like their approaches. And I think it gives you a chance to be a playoff contender more often than not, even if, you know, Indiana has captured lightning in a bottle and is a win away from playing for the unthinkable Hoosiers national championship.
Very quickly, before you read this question, Tim, Notre Dame had to retain. Their retention is still hot. Their retention level of money being spent in NIL is huge. Indiana doesn't have retention, so they can go get Nick Marsh and Josh Burnham, right, and other guys. Christian Gray, Tay Johnson, Adon Shuler, Leonard Moore, CJ Carr, Jordan Faison, Charles Jagusa, Gerby Lambert, Anthony Knapp, Osbury, Drake Bowen coming back, Jalen Sneed, they had to pay more obviously they had to because of the situation. The guys they brought, you think Dallas Golden, Zachary are staying for free? I mean, these guys are Joey O'Brien coming in. There's plenty of money out there for Notre Dame, and that's why you have to be a little discerning.
Think about Notre Dame. Okay, right now we say, Notre Dame doesn't need corners, but there are schools out there that look at Zachary and Golden we'll take
them.
We'll up the ante for those guys right now and throw them in the starting lineup. They showed well as true freshmen. Yeah, it makes it difficult. All right, we have a question from Lax 8907. Given the volatility of yearly NIL deals, do highly valued players injured during the year, such as KVA and Ashton Craig, stand to make less money after a season-ending injury?
I'll defer to you, JB, but they wouldn't get a raise.
Yeah, they wouldn't get a raise, but also I don't think Notre Dame would want to kind of offend those guys and not make them feel valued. And again, I would note this is where agents have told me you couldn't say bring them back and have them on a highly incentive-laden contract because, again, incentive-laden contracts are supposed to be illegal in the college game. So, yeah, you wouldn't expect that they would come back and get a huge raise, although a guy like KVA who got hurt later in the year was absolutely showing you that he's going to be a cornerstone franchise member of your defense in 26 because he was already emerging as a cornerstone franchise defender for you in 25. So maybe it just means they get a small raise or they get the same rate that they were making because you believe in them and you know the upside is there, but you don't have to break the bank to keep them. That's kind of the way that I intuit that situation.
So Traore that way in 2024 to 2025, because he was coming off an ACL, you don't insult him, but you're not saying, by the way, we think you're going to be great in 2 years, so here's all the money you want. I wouldn't think that would work. And you would figure Craig and Jagus aren't getting a raise. I don't mean to play with someone's money, but they haven't played football enough to get one. Like Anthony Knapp could be like, hey, I started 28 straight games for you, dude. Let's think about this.
And the other thing, great point on Traore. If you overpay early because you know the potential there that is there that he can be a transcendent game breaker. But if you overpay him early, then he produces like he does in 25. Where do you go from there? You've priced yourself out of the market. You can't do that.
Next question from VA Doc 88. Would Freeman's staff consider keeping a player that entered the portal but didn't sign elsewhere? And then a separate question from that, guys, is who is the worst portal hit you can remember when it happened? So I don't think the worst portal hit's the same as the one when it happened. But what do you think about Freeman and staff keeping a player? I think they brought Houston Griffith back, for crying out loud. I'd bring back somebody that was better.
Yeah, Freeman's got a pretty long memory, though, when it comes to stuff like that, too. I think it's an individual.
Yeah.
It's a case-by-case situation. John, what do you think, John?
I think it's case-by-case. Also, this is fascinating that this question got posed by VA Doc, because I actually just had this discussion with a college head coach last week, and he was telling me that he does allow his players to come back into the program if they enter the portal and don't find a better fit for them or don't get the payday that they wanted. But he said, look, if you go into the portal and come back, then you do not get your rev share for the spring semester. And over the course of summer, you have to continue to earn it back at a decelerated pace, to where by the time the season rolls around, if you come back into the program and you start, then you get your full revenue share by that fall. But if you go into the portal in January and you decide, coach, I want to come back, like Notre Dame is the place for me, then this coach's philosophy was, that's fine. You come back and you're on your scholarship and you have your team meals and all of that, but you don't get rev share. And then in summer school, you can start regaining your rev share by what you show us that you're putting in the off season. And then when the season rolls back around, if you become a full-time starter and contributor to us, you regain your full revenue share.
There's also a difference, Tim, between I would like to enter my name in the portal on September 28th and redshirt, and Marcus Freeman saying, and I'd like to see what I can do in the portal for this reason, and then maybe bringing him back in the fold as you go through the whole thing. Because you're not quitting on any team when it's this.
Yeah, time. I mean, the Burnham situation is like pretty unique to Notre Dame. And like people, I tried to answer the question multiple times, and it was like, well, if you can't answer, he was pissed. He wanted to play more. He had his mind made up. And so, like, I think a lot of people looked at it like, okay, well, you know, maybe you can try to encourage him to come back with Charlie Partridge. Or he was pissed. He didn't like the way he was handled. And so he had made up his mind. He was leaving.
The second part of this, I'll go ahead, Dave.
No, that's all. That's all.
The second part of this question, at the time, this did not prove true, but at the time, I thought the biggest hit was Rico Flores when he left the program. It turned out to be Pat Coogan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, he would have started at center for half the year.
No doubt about it.
And a team captain without starting.
I still think Rico Flores was a lot. I'd still like Rico Flores on the team.
Yeah, that would be mine. Like, because we knew Diggs was leaving, so I don't know how much that I don't know how much that clouds it when you just know Diggs is leaving, and he almost left another time, and he almost left another time, and all those things. And then Styles made the most of his choice to leave. He was
took a while, but he's done it. And I mean, you're as happy as for Pat Coogan as you can be, seeing him celebrate with Indiana while Notre Dame's at home. You know, hey, I mean.
I was writing about Pat Coogan because I remember talking. I asked Pete actually for the quote, and I have it, and I'll put it out on Monday Musings or a story tomorrow. Pete asked him kind of, this is before the Georgia game, we had open talk. We could talk. It was the only media you could talk to everybody. Like Penn State, they brought out people. This was talk to anybody. Obviously, we hit all the offensive linemen and stuff. He asked him, like, does Notre Dame make your decision hard? Like, in other words, Pat Coogan, if he was not a Notre Dame man, didn't love Notre Dame, he'd have been gone. And up though, when Ashton Craig was coming back, there's no chance he would stay at Notre Dame.
But he's died in the wall, Notre Dame.
Yeah, but he's like, no, this is the only reason it's hard, is basically what his answer was. Like, it's Notre Dame that makes it hard, but you're going to get offered more money and a starting job from a team that made the playoff. If you're not a Notre Dame died in the wool guy, you're gone without blinking. I just think that one hurt because he could have been a team captain as a backup. So that's a valuable guy. And he's the number one backup center, number one backup guard, and a team captain.
How cool him. He was MVP, offensive MVP?
Rose Bowl MVP.
How cool is that?
Amazing. That's awesome.
I mean,
great kid.
How does that happen? How does the center – I mean, that tells you something about the kid and the way everybody that voted.
Yeah, because the media votes. The media votes right there on the spot.
So that was access to him prior to the game, all of that.
Yeah.
What a great Notre Dame man who's an IU man now too.
Yeah, exactly. All right, we have two questions left, though. One is a joke, so I'm going to throw that one out first. From Sentinel Unit, T T.O., if there is time before the podcast, can you please get a quote from Steve Spurrier on Arch Manning being named MVP of the Citrus Bowl? Thank you. JB, I thought of you on this one. Did you see Manning's response, Arch Manning?
I did not.
Oh, they told him he was MVP of the Citrus Bowl, and he goes, my dad did that twice. No offense to the Citrus Bowl, but I don't want another one.
Yeah, I love that. So,
holy cow. And he was laughing. Everybody laughed, but that's well done, and that's a great question.
Let me say this in honor of Sentinel Unit, because I know where he's going here with this. Well, boys, got to see Arch Manning name MVP of the Citrus Bowl. Yeah. You know, can't spell citrus without UT.
Oh, he's the greatest quote of all time. Steve Spurrier is the Snake River Farms of quotes, JB, if you want to put it that way on a podcast situation.
Oh, very,
yeah, very nice. Got it in before you. All right, final question. We'll start with TJP. Don't hold back, Tim. Do all of you find the new era of college football to be more fun to cover than maybe 10 years ago, or are there just too many changes too quickly? I have lost some interest myself with so many roster changes every year. It is actually worse than the NFL. At the very least, put names on the back of these jerseys. I like this part because it isn't worth trying to memorize names year to year. However, I am closing in on 70. Maybe that is the problem. I thought the names on the jersey is very germane to Notre Dame, but everything else would be a regular question.
I mean, from our standpoint, we work with it every day. So that part's not difficult, but you know, there was the big argument now is the calendar, right? Nick Saban was making a big deal how there's a problem with the calendar is a mishmash. It all runs together. And we used to be able to, I mean, just from our perspective, we used to be able to count on, okay, bowl game's over. There's a bit of a break. There is no break. There's a transfer portal, which leads you right into spring practice, and it's unstoppable. We all love what we do, but the calendar is, there are no months. It's just one long 365 days all stuck together, and there is no rhythm to everything. Everything is high alert. Everything is timetable recruiting, timetable portal. Everything's on a timetable.
Yeah. I think there's a duality to answering this question because we are in an industry where content is king, and we've never had more content than what we have right now, for better or worse. And it's a lot of compelling content because of the changes to the sport, but also it's unfortunate because you quite literally we're not going to see another Brock Purdy because Rocco Becht is transferring from Iowa State to go to Penn State, and this cacophony of changes have not all been for the good, and they certainly have been discordant. And so for all of those reasons, yeah, there's some less enjoyment out of it because I'm in the industry, because I'm passionate about sports and journalism, but also because I believe in meaningful relationships. And it's a lot harder to keep meaningful relationships when the roster turnover from coaches to players on down is as transient as it is.
It's the only sport left that had that, like, mom's milk and chocolate chip cookies feel to Saturdays that just does not exist anymore. But you know, Tim, I was saying, like, I don't mind Fields and Pauling and those guys coming in. In no way, I've had a great time covering Malachi Fields and Will Pauling and the guys that come in. But from an opinion of watching other teams, I used to really like to know, like, wow, that guy on USC is going to be a problem for the next 3 years. When Reggie Bush dives over somebody as a freshman, you're like, holy cow, who is that? Like, it was kind of cool to, not that Reggie Bush and USC were cool for that situation, but it was like, you know, it was the familiarity with great players being in great places, like Trevor Lawrence. Like, you remember thinking yourself, God, that guy's a freshman? What the hell is going to happen these next 2 years? Where now you'd be like, man, I wonder where he's going to go next year. If Texas Tech offers him $6 million, he's gone. Like, that's weird, but it doesn't bother me as much from, like, the Notre Dame perspective of Riley Leonard's my favorite player to cover in the last 18 years. Riley Leonard is up there as one of your favorite people to cover. And we had an extended run with him, but we had a 1 year run with Riley Leonard.
It's just one year. Leonard, yeah. You know, and like, as it relates to a quarterback like CJ Carr, I mean, we're going to, it's probably just going to be 2 years with him. You know, you talk about.
No, that's true. That's a great point. Yeah. So if he's great, then it's 2 years. Yeah.
Right. And I'm sure that that's in the back of his mind, maybe closer to the forefront. That's what he's got in mind. And he's going to throw for 3,500 yards coming up. So that will likely happen. But, you know, I think the cool part is, hey, Malachi Fields, because that was a guy that I had pegged, like, maybe Notre Dame could get Malachi Fields after the season, and then they did. Sometimes, I mean, that's just kind of lucky, but I thought that there was a good correlation there. And it's exciting for a guy like that to come in. But there is, again, like John is saying, with relationships and continuity, and coaches come and coaches go so quickly, and you know, a lot of that is certainly lost. But here we are, and I, you know, it's like tracking the portal and pouring over film like I've been doing for the last 72 hours. That's fun as hell. I like that. But you know, the old, I get in trouble when I use this word about Notre Dame, because people don't remember what Notre Dame, the campus itself, looked like. But there was a quaintness about Notre Dame, which was some of the magic of Notre Dame. Not that the magic at Notre Dame's gone, but the quaintness at Notre Dame, the setting itself certainly has. And you know, as you're in this business for a long time and you get older, you get a little bit sentimental about some of the nuances and the innocence of the way the game used to be.
The magic of this podcast is over, but we will be back with more magic on January 8th because it's portal season. JB, portal season coming. Oh, wait, it's already started. I forgot it started already. So portal season has begun in earnest, and Notre Dame has joined it today, and they have some important gets, because that's a heck of a retention group they have. Now you just got to augment. What do you say, Tim Priester, eight to nine this year?
I think nine is the number that I, when you take into account all the positions that need to be filled.
I say we roll with it. For John Bryce, the Football Scoop, Tim Priester of Irish Illustrated, I'm Tim O'Malley. Thanks for watching and listening, Irish Illustrated Insider.